I eat my notes like Ling Ling does.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
It's September 6, 2009. Time for your Gitmo Nation audio publication, episode 128.
This is No Agenda.
Coming to you from the 17th Century Canal House, Crackpot Command Center in Amsterdam, Gitmo Nation East, where we'll happily recycle your old metal joints. I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where the train just went by, I'm John C. Dvorak.
It's Crackpot and Buzzkill in the
morning. Almost not in the morning anymore.
It's 9:26. What's the morning anyway?
Yeah, good point.
It's always the morning someplace.
Yes, and happy hour somewhere else.
Okay. So what do you got this week, Adam? How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing okay.
I went to a football game yesterday and watched the University of California beat the crap out of the University of Maryland 52-13. But, unfortunately, I also ran into the student newspaper where I read a disturbing article.
You asked me how I'm doing and you're off to the races.
Yeah, well, that's okay. We'll get to the disturbing article later. So how you doing?
I'm doing good. I only got one thing to say.
He's a Mac Daddy! He pimps white women and black women. Obama is a long-legged Mac Daddy.
I am just enjoying this pastor so much.
He doesn't like Obama.
People, since we turned our audience on to Pastor Manning, they've been finding all kinds of really choice quotes from the man. It's just fantastic.
Yeah, and of course, I posted on the blog his definition of long-legged Mac Daddy, which he takes forever to explain.
Yeah,
but he does explain it, and it's a very interesting definition, I have to say.
Well, I found actually someone linked to the original one of his original, I guess, speeches where he goes into the long-legged Mac Daddy, and he does have a very interesting point. As to why, and I don't think this is the video that you put onto Dvorak.org/blog, but this is where he explains why he's calling him a long-legged Mac Daddy. It's about 45 seconds worth listening
Obama
to.
Obama is a Mac Daddy. Obama pimps white women and black women. He got started. You didn't notice him till he brought out those big-chested white women with their tight t-shirts and their short pants. That's what a pimp does.
So he's referring to Obama girl, and he has an interesting point. That is kind of when Obama really went mainstream, is when Obama girl started coming out on YouTube, right?
Well, I never thought about it until he mentioned it.
Well, listen to the rest of his...
Let's back up for a second before we play too much of this guy and explain, because not everybody went and listened to Dvorak.org/blogs, little video on this. But the Mac Daddy is a...
The pimp of all pimps, right?
I'm going to define, he's the king of pimps. A Mac is an Uber pimp. Usually, he has a bunch of people working for him, and the Mac Daddy is the best of them all. He like runs. He's a kind of guy, and these people do exist. They actually run hookers worldwide. And
by the way, they should be very proud of themselves. Service.
It tends to be overpriced hookers. Mm. But anyway, so. And then the long leg, it doesn't refer to the fact that Obama's tall. It refers to the fact that he has legs, as in he can, he sustains being a Mac Daddy, a ersatz king of pimps for a long time. And so that's so long-legged Mac Daddy is this guy's phrase, which it has a nice ring to it.
It does. I'm using it all the time. I can't help myself. Long-legged Mac Daddy.
So that's definitely what it's all about. And this guy's a black minister who apparently doesn't like Obama. And in fact, he's an interesting character because he's very moral. He's one of these moralistic black preachers but he also has the black preacher style where he starts to scream every so often, and it's a pacing thing.
And he does more. I mean, I'm not going to play them all, but he talks about Nancy the Witch Pelosi. And Harry the Hen Peckin' Reed, and I was just fascinated by his theory about Obama getting his start in the presidential race, by pimping out white women. I'll continue this clip, another 30 seconds.
Oh, come on! You don't get your campaign started with a big-chested white woman. She must be a 54D, double D. And a pair of white, a pair of shorts on. That's what started his campaign. He put his name on two big 54Ds. Obama! That's where you first saw his name. That's first place I saw it on, two great big old tits.
The guy is awesome. And he's standing there in his preacher outfit, and he's, you know, he's got his ministry sign behind him. He's hit the pulpit there, and it's just, it's phenomenal.
He's a Mac Daddy.
He's a Mac Daddy.
He pimps white women and black women. Obama is a long-legged Mac Daddy.
So he... I like the way this guy says a couple of, they must have been 54 D's, and then he does it. Then he does a beat, and he goes, double D's.
Like, wait a minute, I missed that one.
They're it's double D's. That.
Yeah. Yeah. Guy's fantastic.
Yeah, that's a clip of the day.
Well, maybe, because, of course, the news that hit this morning that Obama's, I think it's the Green Jobs Czar.
Oh, yeah, that's been in the... See, he's a local boy from the San Francisco Bay Area, so he's been in the news for the last 2 or 3 days.
Yeah, we're talking about Van Jones, and he's been, yeah, he's been in the news for three reasons, and he resigned this morning as czar, and I actually have a list of 40... There are 44 czars that our president has appointed.
I have
or
that
has,
list, too.
Well, yeah.
I'm just saying, I have the list, too.
And so the first one is that he was brought into question because apparently he was arrested during the riots in South Central Los Angeles, which he says he was just an observer for the police, and others say, well, he was actually leading the riot or leading some of the rioting. Then there is this, and I think this may be. There may be something to this, that he apparently signed his name to a petition or a letter of people who stated that the government, the Bush administration, was behind the 9/11 attacks and that the attacks were used to get us into Iraq and Afghanistan. And what I understand is some spokesperson came out and said, well, you know, he didn't read the petition carefully enough. It's always my favorite.
Oh, yeah, right. Just sign everything.
He didn't read it. But I think this quote, of which I have a soundbite, is probably what did our man in here. Hey, why is this not? Oh, man, please. I had this all queued up. Hold on, what happened
here?
Yeah,
timing.
Oh, wow. Well, tell us, why don't you tell us about
well,
about
you know,
Van
one of the things that turned up, it's one interesting character who should be in the Obama administration, it seems to me, just for his political savvy, because apparently Obama's boys have been screwing up left and right, whether it's from all these idiot czars that are boneheads or phonies to this guy who just should have been vetted better. And I have a theory about why this is happening. But one of the guys that you'd think would be in the administration, at least preventing this sort of thing, is our old head of the assembly in California and former mayor of San Francisco, the extremely politically savvy Willie Brown, who's essentially been snubbed by the Obama administration. So Brown has, since he's been on the news, but Brown is like one of these unforgiving characters, and so they asked him about this Van Jones guy, and Brown, being a good Democrat, slammed him,
really?
Saying the guy has always been a troublemaker. He's a, you know, he kind of implied that the guy was no good, but he did it in some very interesting way, and it was a very subtle piece of propaganda that I just thought was just amazing, because Brown is so slick, and they used to call him Slick Willie Brown, and he drives a Ferrari. I mean, what kind of a kind of the assembly driving a Ferrari?
I have the clip that I think did Van Jones in. This is at some question and answer session, and there's a question, and the question is relevant to his answer.
When Bush was in office, they had a majority. It wasn't 60.
Yeah, so the question is basically, how come the Democrats
Democrats, I don't think this is the one that did it, man.
Oh, but please. This is a good one, for sure.
No, the crack pipe one is the one that did it,
well,
man.
Let's listen to this one first.
More than 60, but they pushed through all of these bills. But when we have, you know, 58, yeah. We seem to not be able to move things as progressively as many of us here would want, as Obama wants.
Right.
And I know that he has this strong interest in bipartisanship, right. But when nobody in the Republicans...
So essentially, why can't the Democrats get it together like the Republicans can?
How were the Republicans able to push things through when they had less than 60 senators, but somehow we can't?
Uh-huh. Well, the answer to that is, they're assholes.
Now, but he says more that kind of shocked me a bit. So he says the Republicans are assholes.
As a technical political science term. Barack Obama's not an asshole. So, now, I will say this. I can be an asshole.
But here it comes.
And some of us who are not Barack Hussein Obama are going to have to start getting a little bit uppity.
That kind of blew me away.
Well, the saying uppity is probably the one of the keys there. But I still think it was when they dredged up the old crack pipe.
I got it here.
He
yeah,
went
I got
on
it
about
here if you want to.
George Bush, you have that one?
Yeah, I got it here. Hold on a second.
Way to try to bring the price of energy down is simply to increase the supply. To begin to drill more. To drill offshore. To drill here. To drill there. To liquefy coal. To go with oil shale and tar sands. Do whatever you can to get more petroleum into the system. And we heard our president saying just that. That's what he wants to do. And I hate to say this, and I hope I don't offend anybody, but the president of the United States sounded like a crackhead when he said that. I just... A little bit more.
Just a little bit. Oh, it's the expressions that are priceless. He's doing stand-up.
He thinks he's
Chris Rock.
He's obviously watched a little too much Chris Rock and whoever else he sees in the, Def Jam comedy. He thinks he's funny.
Yeah.
You know,
he is funny. That was definitely funny, but, you know, that's not really the way a czar, that's not very czar-like, is it?
Yeah, no, that's the problem. I mean, even the guy who's the only actual professional comic in the Senate, L. Franken, is not doing material. He's not doing shit.
In fact, he's kind of boring. Like, I'm waiting for him to crack a joke or two.
Oh, yeah, no, he's actually gone the other direction. He is extremely serious, and he doesn't want anyone mocking him for, you know, being a clown.
Yeah. But these czars, have we ever had this many czars in an administration ever? 44?
All these guys have had these czars. You know, it looks to me as though these aren't even real jobs. These are just like some sort of way of passing out money to friends.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing just looks... I mean, I looked at that list, and it's just like half of them, including some of them, are sketchy. I mean, you know, I think it is funny that... Anish Chopra and is a czar of technology, and has zero technology experience, period.
Yeah.
And his buddy Vivek Kundra, who's his boss, is a czar of infotech, which is, what is that? I don't even know what that is.
It sounds like a conference that costs you $2,000 to attend. Infotech.
That's what it sounds like.
In the Gitmo Nation East, big story from the Daily Mail, which of course you can bank on them. But this is right along with the ministers of parliament and all of their crazy deductions that they were making, or not just deductions, but they're just taking money to build duck houses in their moats and having their moats cleaned. So they have an 82-day summer break, which is pretty much on par with all of Europe. They always have these long breaks, but even normal people in Europe don't get that much time. And here's what some of them are doing. Let's see. Greg Barker. Made £5,000 for working in his summer vacation, summer job for the U.S. investment firm Pegasus Capital. John Gummer, former Tory cabinet minister, Let's see. He worked during the summer 20 minutes, made 1,600 pounds for equity release firm Sovereign Reversions Limited. See, all these guys are doing consultancy work on the side. The policy chief of the Conservatives, 35 hours for Rothschild Bank. All these guys are working for banks and for financial institutions during the summer. I mean,
that must make the British public happy.
Yeah, it must make you feel real warm and fuzzy. And then here's Patricia Hewitt, another well-known name. Worked for the pharmacy chain Alliance Boots during the summer. Made 21,000 pounds working for British Telecom, who of course have plenty of government contracts, including the multi-billion-pound failure known as their electronic.
But wait, let me get this straight. What you're trying? Let me get something straight here, because I find this. I think you must be making a mistake, because it seems to me that a member of parliament can't be taking just straight up bribe money from large corporations who they have oversight.
Well, let me read the article. It's very short.
It makes no sense. This has got to be a lie.
Ministers of parliament are pocketing up to £5,000 an hour in outside earnings during their 82-day summer break. It was revealed yesterday. Figures slipped out by the parliamentary authorities reveal for the first time. Dozens of MPs have registered huge sums in private earnings since the Commons broke up for summer on July 21st. The revelations undermine claims by many MPs that the long recess, which continues until October 12th, is devoted to constituency work.
It is.
Yeah, their personal constituency of one. And they're likely to deal a further blow to the public image of Westminster, which has been heavily tarnished by the expenses scandal. Among the big earners, number of MPs criticized for making lavish expense claims. So they're actually they're almost missing the point. They're saying, "Oh, these are some of the same people who had large expense claims." But the whole point is their work. Yeah, they're essentially taking bribe money for doing consulting work during the summer with commercial institutions.
Yeah. It's corrupt. It's the worst kind of corruption.
Yeah. Well.
And the British public puts up with this?
I think they will. You know, Big Brother this season is really good.
Oh.
So I have a feeling that they're just going to take it again. Bend over. Well, what do they say?
Bohica.
Bohica. Thank you. Bend over. Here it comes again. Thank you.
Yeah.
Exactly right. Taxpayers in Sweden aren't so easy. They're up in arms. Back in the day, John, in the 70s, when you were in your 30s, wasn't Sweden considered to be kind of like the place where all sexy movies came from and kind of where porn came from?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, they've done a complete 180. Sweden just seems to be clamping down. Now, although I will say that I can understand where they're coming from when the government, the Swedish Film Institute, which apparently is funded by the government, sponsored a female porn featuring women's facial expressions at the point of orgasm, the 500,000 kroner, about $69,000. And everyone's up in arms that, you know, this is ridiculous and this shouldn't happen. Of course, it's complete art. I mean, I think it's a fabulous project, and I'd love to get my hands on a copy of it. But
both hands?
Thank you. Yeah, they're really, really angry.
Well, you know, there's a political correctness movement going on in Sweden that's actually, I think, embarrassing to the culture. And a lot of it has to do with assuaging the huge Muslim population that is pretty much taking over the southern part of the country, including the city of Malmo, which is where most of the immigrants are centered around, not mm-hmm. necessarily in. And it's having an impact. You know, it's just like every place else that you have a bunch of moralists that come in to an area and then they start throwing their weight around. They do represent votes.
Well, yeah, and also the same thing has kind of happened in the Netherlands where, you know, the let's just call them the native population is just lazy, doesn't vote, let alone run for office. And then you get, you know, foreigners in, and they nationalize, foreigners, they nationalize, and then, you know, they become citizens, and then they run for office, and they get voted in, and then you turn around, you wake up one day, it's like, hey, wait a minute.
What happened? Well, yeah. That's why the Danish are the interesting group in the Scandinavian Nordic area, because they have pretty much limited the amount of exposure they have to immigrants coming in and taking over the place.
Well, that's the big push that is, I think, going on in the United Kingdom. Certainly the Netherlands is, you know,
too late.
We want to limit how many, foreign workers can come in, how many people can immigrate into the country. Yeah. I mean, it's about 10 years too late, really, to start, you know, to start,
yeah, you might as well just start counting the days as far as I can tell.
We have a little song, we forgot to play on last week's episode. If there's anything that we love about doing this show, it's, what the fans do. Is just outstanding.
Let's give a back this background this a bit. Last Sunday we had a guy that sent us some money from Manamana, Bahrain, who we thank profusely. And so somebody picked up on the fact that we had slightly referred to the Muppets tune. lo and behold, he put it to music.
Yeah, that's pretty good. It's short, and that's why I like it so much.
Manamana. 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 Phenomena, manamana, 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 manamana.
Bravo!
I loved it.
Oh, it was great.
Well, it was pretty good.
Well, it wasn't bad.
Well, there were parts of it that weren't very good,
though. It could have been a lot better.
I didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
I was terrible.
Get him away!
Hey, boo!
Boo!
It was fun.
Stuff it.
We'll never forget Manamana Bahrain.
So, and who did that for us?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel stupid now. But there's all kinds of good stuff. There's
we have to credit him.
Yeah, well, you were the one that reminded me and sent me the song again, so I figured.
Well, let me look his name.
Look it up.
He's the radio guy.
There's also, and this is not to be played because it's a visual gag. And I'm actually, this is kind of a meme. I've seen this. I guess, is it from Valkyrie? I think the scene with Hitler in his briefing room, and he's got all his guys there. And
no, it's from a new movie called this of a recent movie. Somebody sent me a link to it. It's and apparently people all over the, especially Europe, are making this particular type of gag, which is to just subtitle
it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a No Agenda subtitle spoof, which is pretty damn good. The problem I had is I actually understand German, so I had to turn the sound, you know, way down, so I almost, you know, it was almost unintelligible. Is that the word?
Inaudible,
thank you. Because otherwise it's kind of confusing. You have to kind of tune it out, but it's very, very funny. And I love the way RSS synchronizes with SS. That's cool.
So that is cute, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let me see if I can find our friend here. Fill some time.
Yes, I'll fill some time with a little report from Lake Charles, where Gitmo Nation is closing in on the citizens there as we are taking off our following the footsteps of our brethren in Gitmo Nation East in the United Kingdom, where we have 20% of the world's CCTV cameras now soon to be found in a bar near you.
Soon, if you plan on going to a bar, you may want to think twice before starting trouble. Lake Charles Police Chief Don Dixon is pursuing a plan that's going to make it safer to go into a bar. You'll remember recently off-duty Sheriff's Deputy Logan Armistead was leaving Nate's place in Lake Charles, and two men allegedly attacked him, beating him nearly to death. And while Deputy Armistead is making progress, Lake Charles Police Chief Don Dixon is doing everything he can to prevent this from happening again. He's pushing for a city ordinance requiring all bars where more than 50% of business is in alcohol sales to install surveillance cameras inside and outside.
We feel that it'd be very proactive to mandate that if you own a bar, run a bar, that you be responsible.
At a city council agenda meeting, Chief Dixon laid out his proposal for council members.
It's something we need, and it's something that
we need.
I would think
it's good.
Somebody that owns an establishment that serves more than 50%
all good
would take it among themselves to go ahead and do that anyway and be responsible.
That was the council member.
It's an asset to solving crime, so I'm for that 100%. Yeah.
As the city council looks into the legality and possible implementation of this proposed ordinance.
Yeah, that's a really nice trend. Hang up cameras in your bar.
Unbelievable.
Did you find his name?
No. Okay. Here's the problem. I'm going to find the name before the show's over, or he's going to write us a nasty note or send us another clip that's less friendly. But is when you forward, I have this like a sent box and an inbox, but when you forward a message, it doesn't show up in the sent box. You have to send it. It's ridiculous.
I think you could actually set that somehow.
I don't know. When something's forwarded, it doesn't seem to. So I have to go and do the same search I did when I found it the first time when you lost it. Oh, actually, there was that too. You did have a. I did send it to you.
We got to hit swine flu, John, because we're getting closer to October, and of course that's when the vaccinations will come out, and there's a lot in the news, and there's a lot of things being discussed. But we're also preparing our children. And if you have not seen this website, which I'm Skyping to you at this very moment, please take a look at FEMA for Kids, because this is just a fantastic website where we prepare our kids through great little games and quizzes like Help FEMA Freddy Through the Disaster Maze. This is unbelievable how we are preparing our kids for the black helicopters and for every type of disaster. I mean, this is not what you want your kids doing.
You know, I'm starting to begin, or I'm beginning to think that there is some study or something that came up where in the 50s, for example, there was a movement afoot to scare the crap out of kids.
Yeah, duck and cover, right?
Duck and cover. And then there's a ton of stuff on the Google and on the YouTube that you can find, some of these movies that they would show kids. It's just to scare the crap out of them. And I think that, you know, I don't know if it's a way of making the public more docile or distracting them, but it just seems almost that it's a scheme that somebody unearthed from the 50s to browbeat the public into putting up with a lot of stuff they shouldn't. I mean, I think the British are the worst examples of people who put up with an amazing amount of crap.
Well, I you know, this FEMA for Kids site, which is FEMA.gov/kids, there's even a little story here. It's a cute little tale of Herman P.I.C., which I don't know what P.I.C. stands for, but it's Herman P.I.C. and the hunt for a disaster-proof shell. Hi, I'm Herman. I'm a hermit crab. I know what you're thinking. Hermit crabs can't talk. We can talk, although we usually just talk quietly amongst ourselves. But I'm speaking up now because I have a story to tell. I've learned a lot since I was a little hermit crab searching for my first shell. Let me tell you about it. And he goes on to tell you how he found a disaster-proof shell. What is this about? What is the point?
I have no idea.
Yeah, here's a nice little... The disaster area. Okay, floods, hurricanes, tornadoes, tsunamis, thunderstorms. Let's choose one, John. Would you like wildfires, winter storms, national security emergencies? Until the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001, FEMA responded mostly to natural disasters such as floods or tornadoes. But on September 11th, when terrorists flew planes into the World Trade Center in New York, the Pentagon in Arlington, Virginia, and the countryside of Pennsylvania, the nation's focus changed. So did FEMA's focus. And this is all done with little like cutesy drawings. And so what is terrorism? Terrorism is the use of force or violence against people or property to create fear and to get publicity for political causes.
Well, then I think this brochure should be called terrorism.
Thank you. Terrorists are criminals, and when they are caught, they are put on trial.
They should put the people on trial that put this brochure out.
They throw them into Gitmo. Acts of terrorism include threats of violence, assassinations, kidnappings, hijackings, bomb scares and bombings, and the use of chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons. Now, let's all hold hands and tell each other a secret.
You know, this definition of terrorism, they keep making it broader and broader. I don't think if for example Russia and the United States back in the whenever shot nukes at each other, and they, I wouldn't call it, that wouldn't be of terrorism, it would be called war. Also, kidnapping most of the time is done for the purposes money. There could be terrorist kidnappings like in the Middle East, but generally speaking it's for some dummy trying to get some money.
Yeah, or trying to get Bill Clinton to have a Cabernet with you.
Whatever. So the point is there's something's amiss.
Terrorism.
It's Ray the radio guy, R-E-Y, Ray the radio guy, who gave us that, and I want to thank him for it.
Oh, good. Terrorism is a scary thing. Before you go any further on this page, you need to have permission of an adult. Check with your parent or teacher.
What?
Yeah, oh no, listen. Check with your parent or teacher, if you're at school, or another adult to make sure you have the okay to learn more. Do you have the okay to continue? Yes or no? John, do I have your okay?
I think you can maybe handle it since the cartoon level's around second grade.
My God. Stay alert! You don't have to be afraid, but it's always a good idea to be aware of your surroundings. That means notice if something around you doesn't seem quite right. Know where exits are in the building. Oh, brother.
So I'm looking at the site now, and people should go and check it out. It's fema.gov/kids. Very easy to get to. It looks like it was done by some guy that was on LSD. The color scheme, the blue and green and yellow, and the hermit crab with a kind of a blue
dude,
shell.
It's a hermit crab, dude.
With blue eyeballs, and it's a blue shell. It just looks weird. And then the pictures, like you look at this one, it says becoming a disaster action kid. This guy looks like he's on speed meth. Doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
Looks like he's on speed. And all the other kids are, you know, they're kind of cow-eyed with their eyeballs going every which way. This is, I think, encouraging the use of drugs. I think that's what this is all about.
I just thought it was rather interesting that the site even exists at all.
Well, you know, it's probably another $18 million down the drain.
I can't even
see. I've never seen so many websites as soon as Obama got in these websites. Yeah. This gov, that gov. There's so many websites, it's unbelievable. And you know that if they're going to spend the $18 million on one website, they're spending like probably $1 million per.
Well, there's another website coming, and I have a sound clip from CNN. From the program Homeschool, which by itself is a very fascinating program, particularly if you listen to the host, the person he's interviewing. I think it's very clear who the intended audience is. This is about the new Cash for Clunkers. Of course, the Cash for Clunkers for cars, I believe, is now absolutely closed. They spent the total $3 billion.
Well, they promised it. Yeah, it's closed, but they haven't.
The first billion was spent within a week. Then they had
It was spent in a promissory note sort of way. Most of these dealers haven't gotten a nickel.
Really?
That's my understanding.
Hmm. Well, anyway, it certainly boosted the economy. All car companies reporting production is up. Yeah, no kidding. If you're pumping $3 billion into the car industry for people to go buy new cars, that'll certainly keep your numbers good for a little while. So what's next is refrigerators, toasters, boilers, all kinds of durable goods, I guess they would be called. And this is the Cash for Clunkers Part 2. It's a fine explanation of what it is. And how you can get in on it.
All right, we're going to do some homeschooling here. We got Clyde in with us. Good to see you this morning.
Good to be
but we're
here.
Usually talking about home and stuff like that, but we're still kind of talking about the home.
Now, this really caught my attention because this is definitely jive.
You think?
I'm like, wow, okay. My man Clive is here. My man Clive is going to tell us all about the homeschooling.
He's a Mac Daddy! He pimps white women and black women. Obama is a long-legged Mac daddy.
But we're talking about appliances in the home. Exactly. The Cash for Clunkers, very popular program.
Exactly.
That was for cars. We got a program now for appliances.
We do.
Now, do we know for sure this is going to happen? It's not in place just yet, though, right?
It's going to happen. It's coming. In the next 30 days, it'll be here. And so pretty much, you really have to look at it. It's a great opportunity to get some money for those old appliances.
Now, yeah, let's get it on it.
Now, the Cash for Clunkers for the cars, right. That was a federal program.
Federal program. So
this kind of sort of is, but still, the individual states are getting to make their own rules.
Exactly. It's still using some of that stimulus money. So it's still coming from the same pool, okay. But the states are making their guidelines.
Okay, which state? What are we talking about here? We have a lot that already do have somewhat a similar rebate program, separate totally from the federal one. So which states? I guess we got a graphic here to show which states we're talking about, but several states already have their own programs. Right. We don't have that graphic. We'll try to get that graphic up, but several states, and people might want to check on that.
Right.
This one, we're talking about the Cash for Clunkers, but still, you might have a lot of states already do this.
Exactly. And so what's going to happen is, I mean, the Cash for Clunkers was huge. I think 600,000 people used it. So this is a great opportunity. Again, we're still trying to stimulate the economy, but now you've got an opportunity to get rid of those old appliances that may not be helping our carbon footprint.
Now listen really closely to the information that's being given out, because it's not exactly like the Cash for Clunkers.
Which ones are we talking about? Which appliances? I mean, anything in the kitchen?
Yeah, for the most part, the list is pretty long. I mean, you got refrigerators, you have washers, you have dryers. There's several things that, you know, that help us to be green and to reduce our carbon footprint.
How do we know? How will people at home know which appliance is eligible?
I think you really just got to go out there to check on the net. Find out which appliances. There's a long list. There's several sites that tell you exactly.
Website.
All you have to do is go in and look at it, Cash for Appliances.
But that trade-in kind of a thing with the cars, you had to get a car that was so fuel efficient and whatnot. So do you have to get an appliance or buy a new one that's also?
Energy Star.
Star.
What you're looking for.
This blew me away. Anything that is Energy Star, you will be eligible for a rebate. And Energy Star, John, isn't that just like some kind of industry-based branding thing? Isn't that on computers as well, Energy Star?
Yeah, it's a. It was started by this guy. I can't remember his name. It was back in the 90s, and it was. I think it's. You know, it's almost like the Meritage wines that you can get from the Napa Valley. It's a trademark. I think you have to apply for it to use it. You have to join a club. You can't. You just no. It, not just any winery can put Meritage. It's a trademark, and I think Energy Star is a trademark that you have to. You just can't bandy about.
Yeah. And, actually, no. It's John. There's a website, energystar.gov.
Another $1 million.
And look at the banner at the top. Join the Lorax, which is actually a Dr. Seuss character, and Energy Star, and fight global warming. Oh, there's another kids' website. Oh, cool.
I wonder if they licensed the Lorax properly.
Oh, they must have. There's another kids. Oh, there's another kids' Energy Star. The planet needs you. Find out why. You can make big changes. Find out how.
This may be the reason that one of the biggest things going on in the news around here nowadays is the holy crap. I just clicked on that Laura Star thing. There goes another $1 million.
On the
it's
banner?
Like a big game with a bunch of lot of flash
code. That's
code
the kids
here.
Thing, yeah.
You click on the arrow and it flies around.
Factoid.
Feeling tired? Get some mental energy. Flex that brain of yours with some energy info. Oh, yeah, that'll do it. That'll wake you up. Let's click on that. Wow, this is a ritzy site.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. This is good for $20 million.
Yeah, I think so, too. Get the facts.
What is energy? Where does energy come from? Well, this is a good one. Let me click on where does energy come from? Loading? This flashes. Oh, brother. Some woman sitting in a field, a car driving by, a big building, a plane flying over. Let me click on the woman sitting in the field looking like she's bored. Our bodies can change the food we eat into energy. Okay, then I click on the house. The electricity in your house comes from different types of fuels. The energy is often produced far away and is sent along wires into your home. Very educational.
Here it is,
John. I would never know that.
Special offers and rebates from Energy Star Partners. To encourage customers to buy energy-efficient products, Energy Star Partners occasionally sponsor special offers such as sales tax exemptions or credits or rebates on qualified products. Partners also occasionally sponsor recycling incentives. So they've got this whole thing. Clothes washers, dishwashers, refrigerators and freezers, residential dehumidifiers, water coolers, ceiling fans, boilers, ceiling fans. But these products aren't necessarily going to be made in the USA.
No, none of them are. Now, so did you have the tab where it says meet the Energy Stars?
Wherever that tab is, you get to see Bulby.
There's these Energy Stars. Bulby, which is one of those crappy fluorescent bulbs that, you know, that come from China with anyone. Only this one has a face. And Bubbles, which is a washing machine with a big smile on its face. Celine Flanagan, which is a fan. Celine Flanagan. Laptop Larry. And Telly, who I don't even know what that is. But, by the way, those bulbs, those crappy little fluorescent bulbs that come from China and are loaded with mercury, although not quite as much mercury as a coal plant gives off. Anyway, those things go dim.
Yeah.
And, I have like three.
Officially all beauty bulbs and all 100-watt bulbs may no longer be sold in Gitmo Nation East in Europe. That went in as of September 1st, and so now we're kind of stuck to the mercury bulbs. And, it turns out they're not quite as bright as everyone said they would be.
The long life is on some of them is true, but I've put three of these things up on some cans in the ceiling. And you turn these things on, I mean, they're running. I think they're about a year old. And you turn on the lights, they all light up. They still work. So I guess the life expectancy stays the same. There's like 5 watts coming off of each one of those things. There's like being in a Moscow airport. There's no lumens.
And in fact, they give off about 1,000 volts per meter, I think. You know, these things actually radiate electricity. People have been known to get, didn't we have a clip a while back, maybe a year ago, where people are getting migraine headaches when they were near these light bulbs because they actually exude energy. You can hold up a multimeter next to it and it registers because there's electricity. It's wireless electricity going the wrong way.
Yeah, well, some way you can capture it. I'm sure that the things are still sucking up the same amount of energy and they're just delivering no lumens.
Yeah. Energy Stars.
These things are crap.
Energy Stars.
I've gone back to buying incandescent bulbs because these things. I just as soon change the bulb a lot.
Yeah, but you won't be able to anymore, John. That's the whole scam. That's what's happened here. September 1st. No more 100-watt bulbs. No more flames, and no more things that look like candles. So you're also gonna have to change your lamps.
Yeah, and these. By the way, where are these bulbs made? Can you tell me?
They're made by GE.
In what country?
China, probably.
No, not probably.
Definitely.
The Chinese somehow dreamed up this little idea, and this started about 5 years ago or so, or maybe even a little sooner. They were experimenting with these bulbs for a while. These are small fluorescent bulbs that don't have two. They have a little like a ballast that starts them, and they've discovered they can make them pretty small and get some juice out of them. And then they finally got to these twisty ones. The first ones that came out were just kind of a loop, and they weren't very good. Although I have one of those too, I think the thing's 10 years old. It gives off like a watt of light. It's like a night light. You turn it on, it just blinks a few times and comes on, and then it gives off kind of a grim, yellowish, kind of a sickening color light. And then they up the ante with these curvature, these ones that are all they form like a spiral inside. And they're when you first get them, yeah, they're bright, they're fantastic. And then you use them and they just get dimmer and dimmer, but they still work. They work forever.
So cordless phones can actually also have an Energy Star rating. Let me see the requirements to receive this fantastic rating. Let's see. You have to comply with the Energy Star eligibility criteria, defining the performance criteria that must be met for use of Energy Star certification mark. It's on telephony products. It's very hard to find out how energy efficient you actually have to be, other than what they say is at least 10% more efficient than the federal standard. Wow, big deal.
Yeah, really.
But why? John, it seems like anything can be an Energy Star. And now these federal rebates are going to be given on additional handsets, cordless phones, answering machines, multi-handsets. Oh, my gosh.
You know, maybe there's somebody out there that can answer this question for us who might be living in some area in Iowa or wherever they make, or somebody that works for Whirlpool. During the Clinton administration, out of the blue, as a part of this Energy Star thing, they banned top-loading washing machines. And they banned them. So Maytag, who makes the, you know, always made this fantastic washing machine, was a top loader. You can still buy them. You actually can still get them refurbished, and they last forever. And then they made it so all the washing machines had to be front loading, like you'd find in like commercial ones, or sometimes you find them in these laundry.
Was that an energy thing, or was that a safety thing?
No, it was never a safety thing. It was an energy and water saving thing for some reason. I thought the thing was sketchy. I thought it was just some sort of Bill Clinton corruption where he was like given some money by somebody to screw Maytag, or they were Republicans. I have no idea, because Maytag was the number one at this. And I think Whirlpool also had some nice top loaders. But as soon as these front loaders came in, it's like the last thing a general, you know, somebody who actually wants a washing machine in their house wants. You don't want it because you can't. For one thing, once the wash starts, you can't like throw something in at the last minute because
no, because then the water comes out. Yeah, right.
Yeah, you'd open it up, boom, you'd flood your house. So you say, oh, I forgot this other sock. So the amount of energy it saves because you have to run another wash load is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it never made any sense to me. Why would something that's tumbling be any more efficient than something that's in a bucket that where you have the agitation going? It's just the whole thing seemed like a scam.
Wow, you make a very good point there, John. Very good point.
That's, I don't know about the point, but somebody has to explain to me what the scam is, because I don't know what it is. There's a scam here.
Let me finish the rest of another 40 seconds on the explanation here for people who really need to know.
Energy
and get in on the program. Get some money.
Star appliances. So they're going to have the Energy Star logo on there. Yeah. And so that's what you want to make sure. Those are the fuel efficient or carbon, you know, low carbon footprint appliances.
Fuel efficient? What the hell is that? Fuel efficient. Okay.
Now, I guess they're easy to find. I mean, that's probably out there. A lot of people probably not even aware that this stuff is Energy Star. Will you have to take your old appliance in, like you do your car?
You don't. You don't have to. You don't have to drag your refrigerator in and take it down and turn it in. You don't have to do that. But you can.
Oh, don't worry. We'll just ship that shit off to China. Just leave it on the curb Thursday morning. We'll take care of that.
Can turn it in, you know, and they can recycle it or do whatever they need to do with it. But you don't have to do that.
All right. Last thing. How much money we talked about we could possibly get back?
$50 to $200 generally is what they're talking about for the appliances. So it's definitely not as much as a car, the $4,500 that they have for that, but it's still something. You're thinking about getting a new washer and dryer, and you know, you may be able to get a little money off of it, making sure that it's Energy Star.
All right. Clyde Anderson. The new look, Clyde Anderson. It's still him. He looked a little younger there. Yeah. Lost the facial hair on his face. I'm sorry. I always got to do something. All right. Good to see you.
Jabronis.
Not really.
That's how we educate the public.
They'll do it. Yeah. Anyway, there's something, I mean, there's nothing wrong with running energy efficient stuff. I mean, it's a good thing because you don't have to, you know, what's your point of giving all this money to your gas and electric company? But there's something behind this Energy Star thing that's always bothered me.
Well, it's a government program.
The logo, what's the point? You know, it's like the joining the club. It's like that Meritage wine thing. It's just, you know, somebody's idea of getting something that makes more money, create another institution that makes, you know, that takes more taxpayer money and ferrets it away.
So we kind of strayed from the swine flu topic there for a second. Totally my fault. I do want to say that finally now the word is out. The first mandatory vaccinations have been announced, John. All uniformed U.S. military personnel, immunization starting in early October, announced by the Department of Defense on September
1st. Oh, yeah, right. I know. If you're in the military, you're going to get poked.
First in line for the vaccine will be healthcare workers, deploying troops, those serving on ships and submarines, and new recruits. And of course, families will have an option and easy access to the vaccine. Families of military service personnel, but that kind of blows, man. Mandatory. You can't refuse it. You got to take it.
Well, you know, you signed up. They can do whatever they want to you. So I found something disturbing. I got nothing against the military. But I don't think it should be encroaching on every part of civilian life to the extent that it is. And let me just tell you what the story is. I went to this football game yesterday, which was when the University of California beat Maryland 52-13. And at halftime, I mean, first you had the, you know, they were short of a flyover before the game, but they did have, you know, at the beginning, the national, first they played some America the Beautiful, then the national anthem, then the Marines came out and unfurled some flag that was the size of the stadium. I never seen anything quite like it. And they all, you know, marched off. And I said, well, you know, the military, I've always had some objections to, this only began recently, by the way, these having to do the, you know, the, stand for the national anthem at a commercial sporting event, as though this was some government function.
But don't we always do that when the national anthem plays? Don't we always stand?
Yeah, no, I'm not talking about the standing. I'm talking about playing the national anthem in the first place. Why are we playing the national anthem at sporting events, which are commercial enterprises? Do we play the national anthem when you go to a restaurant? I'm going in to have dinner. Hold on a second. Here comes the national anthem, and everybody stands up and they you know do their respects and they sit down to eat. I don't get it. So okay.
Well, we still pledge allegiance to the flag at schools in the morning.
That's I don't care. I think that's fine. I mean, but it's like I don't think it should be impinging to such the extent that it is on commercial enterprises. Now, but I'm okay with it. Fine. You know, we're stuck with it. You have to go to a baseball game.
It's our culture, John. Come on.
It's new. You won't find this in the 1920s. When Babe Ruth was hitting 60 home runs, they weren't playing the national anthem at the Yankee Stadium.
John, all my life, I cannot remember any sporting event except for NASCAR that did not. Even NASCAR, I think, starts with a national anthem. Or no, they
I don't know. Do they?
My country.
You can hear it with all that racket.
Yeah, someone always sings the national anthem before Indy. Yeah. Yeah,
fine. I know we're stuck with it because it's a commonplace. So everybody does. I just question it because it's like, what's next? You know? Little League games, do they do it there now? I don't know. Maybe they do. Well, anyway, so here's the what bothered me. It wasn't that, you know, I think it's actually kind of interesting. At least you know the game's going to start. But at halftime, they brought a whole bunch of recruits out, and in front of this stadium full of 60,000 people, they swore them into the Army, the Navy, and the Air Force in front of everybody in the middle of the field.
Wow.
This is at the University of California at Berkeley. That was my jaw dropped.
They swore them in, huh? Wow.
Yeah, right there in front of it. And they did the whole thing where the guy says, do you agree to, you know, he had this long spiel.
Uphold
and they
the said, Constitution, yeah.
Yeah, and they all said, yes. And, you know, and then they all, you know, this
sir,
went on
yes,
for
sir.
Five.
Wow.
5 or 6 minutes, and they marched them off, and they literally marched them off.
Which game was this?
The University of California Maryland game in Berkeley.
Wow.
I just thought it was like, what are we doing this for? In front, I mean, this is it's baffling to me. I just found the thing I found it offensive. I'm not there to watch guys get, you know, sworn into the Army.
Yeah.
It's a football game, for God's sake.
What happened to hookers and blow? Ah, damn it.
Anything could be better. But anyway, now we'll get some letters. Well, I think you hate the military.
No, I don't hate the military. My whole family is military.
Yeah, there you have it. Now, my dad was in World War II.
You sure? So you sure it wasn't World War I?
I don't know. Those, you know, those jokes get old.
Yeah.
So
no, I never get it.
I want to back. I did not to you, but I want to back up to this kid's energy efficient star. This Energy Star. I found something on the site. I just have to mention it.
Okay.
I think they should probably pull this. It's for the kids again. It's a factoid. Okay, I'm gonna do a guessing game. Because I actually didn't know the numbers were this extreme.
Just make sure I get back to swine flu before I forget.
Where does our electricity come from?
Our electricity comes from... is it multiple choice?
No, there's a bunch of different sources. In other words, you know, renewable, other...
Oh, okay, right. It's a tree. It's skip logic.
Skip logic, yes.
Okay.
Well, okay, what do you think number one is? I think you can guess that.
Oil?
Coal, 49%.
Okay.
So you think number two would be what?
Oil.
Natural gas, 20%.
Okay.
So
what's number three?
So along your logic, Number three, what do you think?
Oil.
Nuclear. 19.4%.
There's no more percent now left.
Now we're getting down there. There's only like 10%
left. Okay. Can I guess now?
Number four.
Water?
No. Yes, you got it. Oh, you found the site.
No. I'm not looking. I just guessed.
Hydroelectric, 7%. And the last on the list?
Oil.
3%.
Wow.
Other gases, 2.3%, or something, which I don't know what other gases are. I guess methane. And then other renewables, 0.4%. And other... 0.3%.
Well, where's wind? I thought wind was supposed to be so successful.
That would be probably under other renewables.
The 0.4, right.
Yeah, we have not exploited wind very well. Yeah, you're right. Hydroelectric was water. I'm sure. I was hoping you were going to stick with the theme. It's a funnier gag, but you know.
No, I had to mess it up.
Yeah.
All right, so...
Back
to swine flu. The article circulating the circles on the World Health Organization website. There's an article that's been placed about how they released mock-up vaccines in order to come up with the actual. Let me read it to you. Essentially, it sounds like they put some of the virus into the population. According to the website, ways are sought to shorten the time between the emergence of a pandemic virus and the availability of safe and effective vaccines. This is the fast tracking so we can all, you know, shoot up our military in October. One such method used in Europe is to conduct advanced studies using a mock-up vaccine that contains an active ingredient for an influenza virus that has not circulated recently in human populations. When testing these mock-up vaccines, it's very possible to release the novel influenza virus into the population, as its purpose is to mimic the novelty of a pandemic virus and, quote, greatly expedite regulatory approval.
What?
So, yes. So, it seems like they actually had a novel version of the H1N1, released it into the population.
The one that's out there now is called H1N1 novel.
Right. That's why the words are so interesting. GlaxoSmithKline, clinical trials will be limited due to the need to provide the vaccine to governments as quickly as possible. Additional studies will therefore be required and conducted after the vaccine is made available. Thanks. So we're going to do all the studies after we have the vaccine in your body. And the World Health Organization, time constraints mean that clinical data at the time when pandemic vaccines are first administered will inevitably be limited. Further testing of safety and effectiveness will need to take place after administration of the vaccine has begun. Ladies and gentlemen, these guys and gals, and that crazy woman who leads the WHO are literally shooting you up with shit they don't know what's going to do to you. And they're rolling.
I think these guys are out of control.
And they're rolling out big time. Mass vaccination hubs are a part of the District of Columbia swine flu plan, according to the Washington Post. District officials said on Friday they're working to set up mass vaccination centers, potentially at city recreation centers, as a part of a broad push to minimize the number of people sickened by swine flu this fall and beyond. A network of doctors' offices, schools, clinics, hospitals is also being put together for the vaccinations. The city will update its flu website with the case counts and recommendations. We're a lot further than just a few short weeks ago. We're monitoring what other states are doing, said Mayor Adrian Fenty. And they even plan to set up a center at Mary's Center where they can do a whole bunch of vaccinations in one pop. They are out of control, John. And you know that...
totally out of control. They're just going crazy. They finally figured it out that the public doesn't care and doesn't want to... And the media isn't telling anybody anything, especially not in some way that would panic them. And so they're just saying, look, we can get away with this. I mean, look, we tried something like this back when and nothing happened. Nobody cared. And yeah, I know it killed a bunch of people, but so what? And now the government's giving everybody kind of a carte blanche. You know, you can't sue... You know, you can get a shot from some company with an experimental vaccine and you can't sue the company, and then they can require you to take the shot, and nobody seems to say, well, this is crazy
Well, even worse than that, the World Health Organization actually changed their definition of a pandemic. It used to be, you know, a new virus or a new influenza virus that is going around that causes great numbers of death and ill, and they change it to a new virus. Literally, a new virus that is going around the world. And there doesn't have to be tons of dead or sick people. It's just a new virus. So it, for all intents and purposes, it could literally be a seasonal flu, could be deemed a pandemic.
I'm surprised you haven't done that. So if that, you know, pump up some more sales for the flu vaccines, billions of dollars involved here. Back to school ritual quarantines. This is an article in the New York Times. It looks like a typical college dormitory, the functional single cots, the students lazing in pajamas and sandals and laptops and iPhones click to Facebook. But the Turman South Dormitory at Emory University is what administrators call a self-isolation facility, or as students call it, the swine flu dorm, the leper colony, club swine.
The leper colony.
Club swine is my favorite. It's a holding pen at Emory for the coughing, wheezing, hand sanitizing souls whose return to college coincided with their infection by a serious and highly contagious virus. More than 100 strong at Emory, they belong to a growing number of students at colleges across America experiencing a bizarre start to the year, the on-campus quarantine.
Oh, my God. And now that, Merck pretty much failed at their worldwide vaccination of all girls 12 to 18 with Gardasil, the so-called cervical cancer shot, Merck has found all of a sudden, according to Bloomberg, it also prevents genital warts in boys.
Why do they make these things so they got like six? Okay, we're gonna backup plan B.
Hey, like, wow, guess what? We just happened to inject that into a boy and he didn't get no genital warts. Wow, he's only 12. The agency released its review today in advance of a meeting next week on whether to recommend expanded use of the product now approved in women. And in the United Kingdom, it gets much worse. A woman questioned, let me see if I can get it right here, the mother of a 13-year-old girl who became partly paralyzed after being given a cervical cancer vaccination, and this is unfortunately what's been happening to many young girls, says social workers have told her the child may be removed if the mother continues to link her condition to the vaccination.
What?
Yes. In fact, the couple had all six of their children removed from their care after they disputed the necessity of an invasive medical test on their eldest daughter. So what's happening now is if you question, and this, of course, is the National Healthcare Service. This is the UK's version of Obamacare. If you question it, then your kids can be taken away from you because you're an unfit parent.
You question the government, you will obey.
It's
is pathetic. And the fact that the British public, well, I mean, the American public is just as, you know, obviously just as bad, but it's almost like the British is a testing ground for how far you can go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's funny. It's just funny.
Okay. Well, we got that way with it in England, so we can do it here now.
Yeah. Well, of course it's a testing ground. There's a couple more things being tested. Actually, there's a very disturbing trend. We have spoken about part of this, but let me find the links. This is about digital money, which, of course, governments would love to have you on digital money, because if you don't, then we could just turn off your money. So the Chicago Tribune reports, although this was, I think, pretty much known and already implemented, Social Security, as well as Supplemental Security Income, I'm not quite sure what that is, John, but it's an addition to Social Security, is now going to be switched to prepaid debit cards. Now, here's what's interesting, because, of course, whenever a debit card is used, a fee is processed. If you buy a product, there's a fee everywhere. You may not see the fee as the consumer, but a portion is going somewhere else, usually to the network that supplies this. The program is called Direct Express, is aimed primarily at the 4 million Social Security and Supplemental Security income recipients who don't have a regular bank account, but it's available to anyone, of course. It's billed as safe, convenient way for consumers, not, they call them consumers, mind you, to get their government, not civilians, consumers, to get their government income while preventing fraud, theft, and loss of checks. But it gets better.
I think having some money in my pocket is a lot better chance of not getting fraud or theft. This is inviting, of course, especially with old folks. It's inviting identity theft. And you're right. It, by the way, it's about 2% typically. And it's not necessarily by the cardholder, although they'll have some fees tacked onto this, which will rip the cardholder off.
Well, here it comes. The Treasury had, quote, worked hard to keep the amounts lower than the typical debit card for fees. Oh, by the way, if you want a paper statement, you have to pay a fee. Noting that the Direct Express ATM withdrawal fee is about 90 cents. So there's 90 cents when you withdraw money on your Social Security debit card compared to the typical $3 per transaction. However, if you use it at a Comerica Bank ATM, because that's who was issuing
who scammed
this,
us to make this happen?
That's just one of the scams. Yeah, Comerica Bank. It can be, and I've never seen a Comerica Bank ATM. I have no idea what that looks like.
I've never seen one either.
Yeah,
it can
be used without charge at any of its banks, and you're entitled to one other free ATM withdrawal a month. After that, it's 90 cents a pop. So that's Social Security, and then by coincidence, which you got to kind of ask if it is coincidence, I find this little ditty. Hold on.
Oh, he's been a busy bee.
Yeah, I've been a very busy bee. Walmart, the largest employer in the United States, who employ, I don't know how many, hundreds of thousands of people, has decided to go paperless when paying employees is switching to direct deposit and debit cards. And they are tied into First Data Corporation. And they also will offer one free ATM transaction per pay period to users. Now they're not consumers. Now they're users looking to take money out. So when you have Walmart not paying you, not giving you a check, but giving you a debit card, someone is making a crap load of money. 1.4 million employees Walmart has.
So in the San Francisco Bay Area, just for your information, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 Comerica ATMs, one in San Francisco, and then one on what looks like to be on the freeway somewhere down on Highway 101.
It's a Texas bank, I believe, right?
I don't know. I didn't look at that.
Yeah, I think it's a Texas bank.
Well, good work for Comerica. This sounds like, you know, they're doing their job.
Good scam. Excellent.
Good one. Excellent.
So unemployment rose to 9.7%.
About 17% real.
Yeah, 16.8 real. And the president spun that as he just spun that beautifully. So here's the next scam, which I just love. This is the President Obama's speech to the nation, his radio address, which is basically his YouTube video. It's his user-generated video he does every single week. And he is now working on implementing a scheme to make you, almost force you in a way, or at very least to trick you into putting money into 401ks. Of course, 401k retirement plans are often matched by your employer, but essentially you put it into a bank. You know, and it could be it's a Wall Street scam, and then they invest in all kinds of stocks and bonds, and you can say, I want a risky portfolio, I want a very safe portfolio, but essentially more than $2 trillion of citizens' 401k money went poof.
And yeah, now, most of them became 101ks.
And yeah, really down to 25%. And now the president wants to make it easy for all kinds of money to flow into your 401k, i.e. back into Wall Street, because we have to save the economy. Have a listen.
We cannot continue on this course. And we certainly can't go back to an economy based on inflated profits and maxed out credit cards. the cycles of speculative boom and painful busts, a system that put the interests of the short term ahead of the needs of long term. We have to revive this economy and rebuild it stronger than before.
That, to me, is doublespeak for it. We need more money in our Wall Street system.
Well, the other thing, doublespeak thing, is the interest of the short term is bull. It's not what was in the interest of the short term. It was in the interest of these schemers, these credit card companies, these scammers who charge 18%, or they make you sign up for, you know, low interest rates, and then you go over by $1. And next thing you know, you got a 40% interest rate bill. Essentially, usury, the kind of thing that used to be illegal, these ridiculously, I mean, this is why there's no loan sharks anymore. They put the mafia out of business. And how is that, what's it got to do with short-term, long-term?
Well, listen on and you shall enjoy.
And making sure that folks have the opportunity and incentive to save for a home or college, for retirement or a rainy day is essential to that effort.
Rainy day would be now, dude.
If you work hard day. And meet your responsibilities, this country is going to honor our collective responsibility to you to ensure that you can save and secure your retirement.
Now, listen how easy we'll make it to take your money and not actually give it to you.
That's why we're announcing several common sense changes that will help families put away money for the future.
Into Wall Street.
First, we're going to make it easier for small businesses to do what large businesses do. Allow workers to automatically enroll in a 401k or an individual retirement account.
That to me, by the way, John, sounds like they're going to set up some kind of government 401k. I mean, I don't understand how easier it could be. I mean, you can choose from a million different 401k plans as a company.
We know that automatic enrollment has made a big difference in participation rates by making it simpler for workers to save. And that's why we're going to expand it to more people. Second, we'll make it easier for people to save their federal tax refunds.
So your tax refund can go straight into a 401k. Please listen on.
Which 100 million families receive. Today, if you have a retirement account, you can have your refund deposited directly into your account. With this change, we'll make it easier for those without retirement plans to save their refunds as well.
And I take it this is only for federal because, of course, if you're in a state like California, your tax refund was actually an IOU. I'd love to put my IOU in a 401k and put it to work while I sit there and wait for it being a worthless piece of paper.
You'll be able to check a box on your tax return to receive your refund as a savings bond.
A savings bond.
Wow.
A savings bond. That's not even a 401k. That's a savings bond.
Whoa. I didn't even know they still had them.
Third, we'll make it possible for employees to put payments for unused vacation and sick days into their retirement plans if they wish. Right now, most workers don't have that option. And fourth, the IRS...
How does the government get involved all of a sudden in my business? How are they going to do that? How are they going to make that possible through my company? That people can put their sick days into a savings bond?
A commissar will be dropping by in the morning.
Us and the Treasury Department are creating a plain English, easy-to-follow guide, as well as a website, to help folks navigate what are often very complicated waters, especially for workers changing jobs who often are unsure how best to continue saving for retirement, because the rules ought to be written to encourage people to save instead of discouraging them. We'll also build on these steps by working with Congress. As part of my budget, I've proposed ensuring that nearly every American has access to a retirement savings account through his or her job. This plan would make it possible for workers to automatically enroll in IRAs through payroll contributions. And the budget simplifies and expands a tax credit for millions of families, matching half of a family's savings up to $1,000 per year and depositing the tax credit directly into a retirement account.
He's a Mac Daddy! He pimps white women and black women. Obama is a long-legged Mac Daddy.
Oh man!
Yeah,
so this is exactly
expecting that.
Yeah, this is exactly the kind of stuff that that we'll be discussing at our first no agenda roundtable dinner on the official day of Thanksgiving, October 3rd in Las Vegas, Nevada, and a number of spots have already been taken. It's a limited run. How many people are coming, John? 10, 12, including us?
Yeah, and the thing is, and of course, by the way, if the event gets canceled because we miss one person, I think it's going to be oversubscribed, to be honest about it. But say something happens, it's a totally refundable, so it's not like, you know, actually we lose a little money on the refund or just give everybody their money back. And there's a link now on the noagenda.squarespace.com and dvorak.org/NA site that you can click on, and it's going to be October 3rd. It's going to be probably at Fleur de Lis or one of the high end restaurants.
Right, and that Las of course Vegas, that's your donation pays for that. You get a great dinner. You get a great it'll be a couple bottles of wine, but it'll be
it'll be enough wine for everybody.
Yeah, John will personally select, and we're gonna have just a good time, and we'll chat about stuff and any entertainment booked.
No, you never know. We have a dancing girls. So, but anyway, we want to get this thing booked up by within a week and a half or so, because otherwise I don't want to lose the room, and because we have to book it. And there's unfortunately what's going on right now is that everything, all of a sudden, all the restaurants around the country or the business is starting to boom. In fact, I was talking to the restaurateur the other day, and they said the same thing that a lot of other people have noticed, which is including the Silicon Valley folks. This may not be true around the country, but it definitely is true on the West Coast, which is that the economy really did bottom in March, and which was actually a double bottom, because it actually bottomed in November too, and it was really dead. In fact, Adam and I, when we were going to restaurants, we could always get reservations, and it was very easy to do on a Saturday, Friday. You could always get in at the prime hours. But now, as of the last couple of weeks, you can't get into any good place in San Francisco on Thursday, Friday, or Saturday unless you go at 5:30 or 10, and it's almost roundly consistent. And I've talked to these guys, and everybody knows it's picked up. Now, this could be like the beginning of the end. In other words, people are all partying as the Titanic sinks.
Yeah, because the derivatives are about to pop, and that's when it all comes tumbling down. But yeah, I mean, we might as well, you know, get it while the going's good.
And so we want to book this thing. So go to dvorak.org/NA or this noagenda.squarespace.com and link there. It's still going to take you to the same page. I'm consolidating it. And all the other links are working fine. So if you want to do the $5 subscription or a $50, $100 donation, it's good too. We do have a bunch of donors this week. And I want to thank everybody. We had a lot of them this week in terms of just numbers. It was funny because we had a lot of the 50 and 100 style, but the number of people subscribing seemed to be particularly low for some reason. But let me name out a few guys. Theo Burkham, I'm not sure we didn't do him last week, but he's from Kitchener, Ontario, and he gave us $127.03. Can you figure out why?
$127.03. The House, the Ron Paul House resolution?
Maybe. I don't know. I got one here that will confuse you. Brett Farrell, $75. He wants a ringtone. And by the way, people want ringtone, send a separate email with the subject line ringtone to john@dvorak.org and put the ringtone you want. We'll do it. We're going to do those separately. We're not going to do them on the show.
Oh, really? That's part of the fun, I thought.
I think it's going to be too boring.
Okay.
Graham Buck, and we can send them, you know, a file, and they can cut it up easier. Graham Bucknell, Durham, North Carolina, in line at $80.08, which refers, as far as I'm concerned, to the Intel 8008 chip, the original microprocessor, which actually was the 4004. So two of those, two fourth, you know.
I got it.
Chris, I don't know what it was, what he really means. Chris Engler, Milton, Ontario, 50, which I, Nargone Systems, Inc., in Atlanta, 64. David Sandler in I love this town. David Sandler gave us $100, and he's in one of these great towns. Lone Tree, Colorado. My guess that there's one tree in the town.
It's L-O-N-E, not L-O-A-N.
Well, that's good. Stephen E. Taft, Marietta, Georgia, $100. Frederick Bodiger, I think we may have mentioned him. I think he's giving us a couple of times. North Haven, Connecticut, $50.01. Matthew Carey, Marriottsville, Australia. He gave us 50. We're Marriottsville.
Wow, that's great.
Gerald Kandolf in Tufenbach, Austria. Tufenbach, I think it's pronounced right. T-E-U-F-E-N-B-A-C-H.
Teufenbach.
You think it's Toy?
Teufenbach.
Teufenbach? Okay.
Teufenbach.
Right. 50. It's Gerald Kandolf. Marcin, this isn't... Okay, Marcin Bekiza, B-E-K-I-E-S-Z. I think people just are putting names that we can't pronounce. In Edinburgh, $50. James Smith, Ottawa, $50.01. Jonathan Cleed, which I think is a great name, by the way. Cleed. West Hollywood, 75. John Kilbourne, Houston, 100. Daniel Jackson, Clematis, Victoria, Australia. We got to do more Australian stuff. $50. Eon Smith in Red Car, Cleveland, UK. Is that right? 60.
Red Car? R E D C A R?
Well, that's the way it looks. Maybe not.
Maybe it's Birmingham. Can't quite read the notes. Have you been eating your notes again, John?
I eat my notes like Ling Ling does. Travis Wynn in Hammett, I think we mentioned before, 50. William Casey, Golden, Colorado, 50. Nice town. Okay, here's the one. Fenimore Johnson, San Diego, gave us $56.83. What does it mean?
$53.83?
Yep.
$53.83?
Yep.
That's got to be
another... Don't type it in.
That's got to be another house resolution.
Nope. It's the code that you would use when texting on a phone to spell out the word love.
Oh, that doesn't, makes no sense.
No, 5683 on a regular phone. When you five is an L.
Oh, eight. But you said 5383.
No, I said 5683.
No, because on my Nokia, 5 is G, 6 is H.
No, it's more than G.
No. Oh, I see right, what you're saying.
We'll straighten this we gotta straighten that out later.
How much was it? $53. All right, I don't care. It spells love. It's good.
Mike Westerfield, Tristan Lennon. Mike Westerfield's been.
You know, there's a lot of phones that don't have the letters on it anymore.
I know.
It's very difficult.
Impossible. That's why you can't use the, you know, like, call 1-800-ADAM.
Yeah, no, you can't figure it out anymore.
All right, we got Mike Westerfield from Parts Unknown. Tristan Lennon, I don't know if it looks like Tristan gave us money again. And I think only because he's in, Tristan is a guy's name or a woman's name? What do you think?
Guy name.
In Wagga Wagga.
Yeah, mana Wagga Wagga.
John Matthews, Parts Unknown, $111.10. Beth, and he's been giving us oddball amounts of money every so often. Beth Graphics, Alkmaar, New Zealand, 70. And Eric Mann in Parts Unknown, 50. I don't think I left anybody out except Kurt Zeiser, who is now our patron knight, wanted to go to the dinner. Or Kent, I mean.
Oh.
And Kent is one of our early knights.
Right, yeah, of the No Agenda Roundtable, yeah.
Yeah, he's out in Clovis, New Mexico. I guess he owns half the town. And he and his wife. And he couldn't make it to the dinner, so he gave us $500 instead.
Wow.
So he's a patron knight now.
Well, wait a minute. So this, you know, and to be the opposite of greedy, we could take his $500 donation since he's not coming, and we could give one seat away.
Yeah, we could, but the fact is that was not what it was designated for.
Oh, okay.
And we honored the designation of the money. But if somebody wants to do that, I'm in.
Yeah, it's a great. I think it's a great idea. Yeah, we can come up with some kind of contest. With that lamp thing from Energy Star.
Yeah, how long will your lamp actually last, giving off at least 5 lumens?
Well, thank you very much, everybody, for your donations this week. That's fantastic. That, of course, motivates us entirely to continue and gets us closer to our third day a week, although we're still quite a ways off from actually making a career.
Yeah, actually, we got up, we doubled this, which means... I mean, if we double our income, we could probably do 3. But anyway, yeah, I want to thank everybody, and I want to encourage people to go to noagenda.squarespace.com or dvorak.org/NA, and And we're going to have our own No Agenda bank account this week since you're back in town.
Oh, cool. And for those of you who don't know yet, we have no advertising in this program. We don't want to spoil it. We don't want to ruin it. We don't want to have to listen to any man upstairs tell us what to do. And that's why we ask for donations to supplement.
No, we actually want this to be public supported. This show will not be nearly as good or interesting, although we'd probably make more money if we sold out.
Oh, yeah.
But also, I think it changes the pacing of the show. We don't need to be interrupting the show every so often and, you know, changing the entire tone and tenor. So we can go on and on about some product that, or play a product's commercial. It just doesn't seem. I mean, I was watching the Keith Olbermann show the other day, and I swear to God, he teased one thing for the entire hour and then played it at the end. It was some Glenn Beck.
So you had to watch all the commercials until you finally got to the good stuff.
The worst part was the fact that I think at least twice in his show. They break for a normal commercial break because cable doesn't have the same, you know, kind of oversight that the regular TV does in terms of like how many commercials can you play. So I play like 7 commercials and go back to Olbermann. I swear to God, I have this. I'll run it as a clip next on Thursday. They go to a whole slew of commercials. They go to Olbermann, who teases that same Glenn Beck clip, and they go right back to commercials. He doesn't even do anything. It's like, commercial, 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 and we're going to, I'm back to the show.
You won't believe it. You won't believe what's coming up next.
Boom, back to commercial, commercial, commercial. It's like, how can people watch this crap? It's all commercials, and even with TiVo, you're getting like repetitive stress syndrome on your thumb, pushing the button to get pass.
And I will say that in the very beginnings of the internet, that people were saying, you know, wow, you know, I'd pay money just not to have commercials. Well, here you go. There's certainly enough of you out there where we could actually make some real money with commercials. You don't want them. This is one way to make sure we never get them.
And this is calling the bluff of the public.
Yeah. Let me just do two quick stories here, John, just before we sign off.
Well, I still got my college story to do.
Okay. You do the college story after I do. Wall Street's new business, because of course the mortgage business blew up. They've got a new one, and this is actually, I think, ties right into swine flu. Have you heard of these life settlements, John? These are basically reverse life insurance policies. So
you're selling your life to Wall Street?
Well, yeah, life insurance policies that ill and elderly people sell for cash. So $400,000.
Oh, yeah, I have heard of this.
Yeah, $400,000 for a $1 million policy, depending on the life expectancy of the insured person. They will now be securitizing these policies by packaging hundreds or maybe even thousands together into bonds. They will then resell the bonds to investors like pension funds who receive payouts when people with the insurance die. But here's the kicker. Of course, the sooner the policyholder dies, the bigger the return.
Wow. This is a really cool derivative.
Yeah. So if you invest
Who dreams this stuff up?
Yeah, well, so if you invest in Credit Suisse, if you invest in one of these securitized life insurance policy bonds, and you invest in GlaxoSmithKline, you can't go wrong because you're on both ends of the hedge. It's a beautiful thing. We get more swine flu vaccine filled with adjuvants that are going to kill people. And then you get a higher payout as they die earlier.
It's a perfect straddle.
It's a straddle. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And then I just wanted to tell you two quick things about how your U.S. government works. John, I am so sure that you've seen this picture. You've probably blogged it. And if it's not Photoshopped, it's just unbelievable. It's a picture of House Minority Leader Lawrence Cafero Jr., who's speaking to colleagues at a budgeting meeting for the fiscal year in Hartford, Connecticut, at the Capitol. And it's from behind, so you see on the laptops what the administration there is actually doing. Two of them are playing solitaire on their computer. One is looking at a baseball game. It is the most fantastic picture of your government at work, even if it's local. Have you seen the picture?
No.
Oh, I Skyped it to you.
Oh, let me look.
This is I'll just read from the article. Two Democratic legislators were playing solitaire on their state-issued computers Monday night during a late-night debate on the state budget.
I question this picture, by the way.
I do as well, but, you know, no, I haven't heard anyone rebut it at the moment. And then finally, before you get to your college story.
It looks, by the way, as though the woman on the left is playing the extremely elaborate game of Spider, which I think is the greatest solitaire game. Especially with all the suits.
You have mentioned that before.
Yeah. That's what it looks like she's playing. That's the only thing that she could possibly be playing, which means she lives a life of frustration.
So we've been wondering why Justice Sonia Sotomayor was voted in and why she was so important. I think I might have a clue. The Supreme Court will be holding a rare special session, which marks the debut of Justice Sotomayor. At issue is whether prior rulings limiting corporate spending on federal elections should be overturned. The justices could decide to erase the subtle but important distinction between corporate donors, which are subject to regulation, and individual donors, who are largely not. And I think we should keep our eye on this, because if it's overturned, I guess then... Well, then it's just a free-for-all. Then corporations can just donate directly into politicians' pockets without any limitation whatsoever.
Yeah. It's a bonanza.
So all of these links that we've discussed today will be in the show notes at noagendashow.com or noagenda.mevo.com. And now your story about...
Well, first I want to do a correction from last show. Alexander, who's now our Russian cultural attaché, sent a note in mentioning to Adam in particular, you were probably in Chicago when the only Moscow American Airlines flight was departing. That's why you saw so many Russians.
Yeah, it was actually KLM, but okay.
Well, no, but when the other flight was departing.
It was at the check-in counter for KLM.
And they were in line there?
Yeah. Oh. Tons of them. But okay, I'm sure they were just transferring in Amsterdam to move on to Russia. They didn't have the direct American Airlines flight because, of course, it was filled with Russians.
Anyway, the point he's making is that these Russians are not the Russians with all the money that are growing crazy. He says they're all in, made it clear that they're in New York and the Bay Area. I found that a little weird.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Anyway, so he's going to keep us apprised of what the Russians are up to. So my thing, I'm going to this football game. I pick up a copy of the Daily Cal, and in it there's a article on the front page. Faculty discusses campus's future, and it looks like the University of California, which has been out of control for a number of years in terms of their spending, and a friend of mine who taught there mentions the fact that the average salary at the University of California administration, the average salary is $300,000 for any administrator, which means there's some people making million.
Yeah.
But the professors themselves are making like up to 300 and more thousand. In fact, there was a list in 2005 in the SF Gate about some of these guys making 350 plus in terms of they get overtime for some unknown reason. And they get housing allowances. They get, I mean, there's just amazing. And we're not talking about famous people. We're just talking about, the run of the mill types. So but meanwhile, the state's broke. And the University of California is moaning because they built a bunch of expensive new facilities and nobody wants to take a pay cut.
Don't tell me they're going to get some stimulus money, are they?
No. What they've decided to do is they're going to crank up, instead of serving the state of California, by the way, this is going on throughout the country. These universities have gotten, they get a tax-free deal, they get free property, and they have all this, and they're supposed to be serving the public, but now they're going to change. They want to increase the state out of state, which means China, by the way, student admissions from the current 10%, which is pretty high, to 22%. Because they can gouge these kids. And besides the fact that they're already gouging the Californians, I ran the calculation on this website. And if you're a family making $50,000 a year, you can expect to pay $26,800+ to send your kid to the public University of California, which is a state institution.
And that's for 1 year?
That's for 1 year.
my. And by the way, look at how much they learn. My goodness. We got us.
Now these guys are saying, and they apparently say, well, you know, we only get $4 billion from the state. We get, you know, that's only, you know, some like 20% of what we use because we get a lot of free money from all over the place and all these ridiculous
things. I bet they have a great health care plan, too.
So that they used to, but they don't anymore. I mean, the professors do. But right. I was a student there, we had free health care at they had a hospital on campus. And we'd go there and it was free.
You can go to the swine club. The swine
but now club. I understand it's not anymore, of course. So anyway, so they've decided to, you know, now they're talking about kicking the state out of their business. Even though this is a state
school, but the state,
they're going to kick the state out. They said we can go it alone.
Wait a minute,
we don't need their money.
I don't understand how that works.
And I'm thinking, for the first thing I would say to these people, and I would like to know anyone who's got some insight in the University of California system has some complaints that we can air here on the show, is I'd like to know, you know, why don't you guys just do that, and then we'll take a look at that tax-exempt property you're sitting on all over the state, which is worth billions, and just tax the crap out of it. Well, you know, let's turn it around. Instead of getting $4 billion,
let's get some of that money from them. Yeah,
let's get some money from them.
So we can pay the firefighters who are fighting fires, and service workers who are getting IOUs instead of checks.
So anyway, I just found the whole thing abhorrent. And I could go on with it.
Nothing to see here.
Ooh, look at that.
Sorry.
You know, one of the things that happened, a friend of mine is on the College of Letters and Sciences Advisory Board, or the board, I guess. And he says to me, I said, well, yeah, this is years ago. I said, I'd like to get my son wants to go to the University of California. He says, nah, he's not going to get in. I said, why? He says, it's not like when you and I were kids. He says, you can't even get in now to colleges, letters, and sciences unless you have at least a 4.4 grade point average.
Well, your last name is Bush, Clinton, or Cheney.
And I'm saying 4.4 grade point average. How do you get 4.4 on 4.4? A 4.0 scale?
4.4?
Yeah. And so he says, no, it's because what's happened is there's a scam that's evolved over the years. It used to, apparently, I did some research into it, and it used to exist when I was a kid, but nobody paid attention to it because you didn't need to, called the, you know, advanced placement system, which is essentially a money-making scheme to give you all kinds of credits that
extra
add
credit.
Whatever.
Oh, jeez.
It's off the books extra credit that you pay for, essentially, as a part of a corrupt system that has made it so, you know, you can't even go to the public school anymore unless you, like, are in on this crazy game.
Wasn't this president supposed to make education really easy for everybody and everyone, you know? And how about our previous president? No Child Left Behind? I mean, how did this get so out of control?
It's completely, it's beyond out of control. And the worst part is the arrogance of these universities at this level and I still don't get overtime for professors. I mean, what kind of overtime?
Yeah, what happened?
I had to read a book last night. I mean, what is overtime?
Because they're all reading Atlas Shrugged, John. It takes forever to get through it. Yes, he's done it once again.
He slipped it in. Okay, and I will have further gripes, but I would like anybody out there with horror stories about college experiences around the country and scams that they or perceived scams. So you see something that doesn't look just right. Hey, email me, put in the NA or no agenda in the subject line, and I'll collect this stuff and we can just complain bitterly. Because I think a lot of this stuff is going under the radar. I mean, the stuff that was done by SF Gay, the San Francisco Chronicle, where they were moaning about this, was really ended around 2005. It's gotten worse since then, but I think that the Chronicle, because of the nature of the newspaper business, they got no feedback saying, you know, we want more stories like this, so they dropped it.
Unbelievable.
Anyway.
All right, let me wind up with one more quick clip, and I believe this is real. It could be doctored. It's a YouTube video. It's of John Murtha, and he is taking a vote in, the House. And so this is how democracy works, I guess. And there's some questions about it that come from the floor.
Those in favor of a vote will stand and remain standing. On approval of the journal. Those in favor say.
So this is, it's not really an important thing. It's the approval of the journal, whatever the hell it is. But listen,
it's basically the document.
Right. Okay. Whatever the document is, I don't have the context.
Aye. Aye. Opposed will say no.
No.
Opinion of the chair, the ayes have it.
Speaker.
The ayes have it. Listen.
Requested. Those favoring a vote by the ayes and nays will please rise. Number have arisen, the ayes and nays are pursuant to clause 8, rule 20, further proceeds to the question.
This is from C-SPAN, by the way. Now they get some questions. Everyone's pissed off.
Did the chair tell me how many members rose to request the recorded vote and the total number of members present in the House upon which the chair made his decision?
It's up to the chair, and let me tell you this. The vote will show that the approval would be approved by the House, as it has been.
Mr. Speaker, further parliamentary inquiry.
That's not a parliamentary inquiry.
Mr. Speaker, a further parliamentary inquiry. Does not the Constitution require that in order to get a yea and nay vote, there has to be 1/6 of the members present requesting a yea and nay vote?
1/5.
Excuse me, 1/5.
Gentleman's correct.
Further parliamentary inquiry, does not a recorded vote in the House require the second of 44 members?
The quorum is present.
Further parliamentary inquiry, did 1/5 of the members present stand? And if so, how is it possible to challenge the call of the Speaker?
Here it comes.
On the accuracy of
the
count of members present.
Not subject to question.
Mr. Speaker, I make a point of order that 1/5 of the members present did not support the demand for a recorded vote or a yea or nay call.
Oh, I love it. You just got to look at this video. You hear twice as many nays. And he says, oh, it's passed. The ayes have it. It's beautiful.
Yeah, well, you know, you can do that. I'm surprised they can't get anything else done.
Yeah, like healthcare. As an example. All right, John, I think we did go a little bit over our quota today on time. But, hey, everyone's getting their money's worth.
Yes, and go and take part in the dinner. Which will be on October 3rd. Go to Dvorak.org/NA. Sign up immediately.
Yeah. And I will be leaving for the United States tomorrow, flying back to San Francisco. So we'll be doing the show in close proximity. And maybe we can do a dinner this week, John, and do a review. It's been quite a while.
Yeah, there's a bunch of places.
That we haven't been to yet?
Yeah, a couple.
Okay, excellent. Coming to you from the 17th Century Canal House, Crackpot Command Center in Gitmo Nation, east in the heart of Amsterdam, I'm Adam Curry.
And from the Northern Silicon Valley in Northern California, I'm John C. Dvorak.
We will talk to you again on Thursday morning, Gitmo Nation West time, same time on No Agenda Stream, right here on No Agenda.